So, as usual, you know how a broad question period will all be there. You can all ask us anything you want to ask us, and that we may or may not want to answer. But you're welcome. Sorry. Oh, cool. Yeah, good idea. So, well, you can. It won't be that long. Is this open?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So first, and you're right. So I will introduce Elise. Elise is the new director of ISR. So one of our big teams, and so Elise Castagnier. Was recently at SAQ, where she had very similar responsibilities in a very strangely similar. I remember having those discussions during the interviews and, you know, talking about what's going well, what's less going well, what's hard, what's not hard. So, oh my God, this is very, very familiar. And it was interesting to see that someone coming from a domain that was in a way different because it's retail, it's not education, but because it's public sector, because it's subjected to regulation that is very similar to the regulations we have, finally we found that we were more similar than dissimilar. So that was an interesting conversation. Sometimes we talk to others and we find we're not so unique as we feel, Elise, welcome, and I'm sure that she knows everything now about ISR, and she can answer any question.
No pressure.
No problem. So go ahead, Vicky.
Well, I was surprised not to see my name on the agenda. But all right, I consider it engagement, asking questions. I encourage people to ask questions. One of the things that struck me this week is I'm hearing more about religious studies in their proposed move from Faculty of Religious Studies to the Faculty of Arts, and that's supposedly, I understand, coming in May 2016. And yet we already have applications open for fall 2016 in the Faculty of Religious Studies. These changes have not been made in the system. And I'm wondering if there's a place for IT at the table when these kinds of policy decisions are being discussed. Has that ever come up? Is not necessarily to block them, but to perhaps talk about the impact of these things, the timing of decisions, if we're trying to do things in a more efficient way and not create costs of conversions and things like that. If there's nobody at the table to talk about that or to force them to consider that or consult with us before proposing these things, we're sort of doomed to always having to take care of these things.
Yeah. Well, realistically, the answer is no. The day we will be consulted on academic issues, the sky will fall down, I think. Anyway, that's my opinion. That doesn't mean we're not aware. So I think that realistically, it's more an awareness question than part of being in the discussion. There are many areas where I'd love us to be involved. Collective agreement negotiation. I have often huge impact on our systems, and nobody asks us to tell them, hey, whoa, that little decision you're putting here, that's going to cost a bundle. It's not part of the discussion at that time. If we could just improve communication, though, in the sense of getting that information. So we are aware of discussions to move the religious study to arts. I think that discussion started more than a year ago. So we know about it, but until they decide, is it going to be done? How is it going to be done? When is it going to be done? It's very hard for us to measure what are the impacts. So there are some from organizational perspective. From a program, though, there shouldn't be significant. There's no reason for their programs to change because they're moving into the Faculty of Arts. So I don't know what the level of impacts will be. I suppose that depends on how exactly they do that move. And it should have impacts in HR, should have some impacts in the student system, and will have... In G2 and, in many places. But I think at this point what they're envisioning is relatively small in the sense that they're not moving at this point. I didn't hear about reviews of program at this point either. I think it's more realistically it's a very small faculty. They do not have a lot of resources to manage their day-to-day activities. It's going to be a plus for them to be in the arts environment because it's a much bigger faculty with much more resources. So I think that is seen as a positive thing. But realistically, no, we're not. We won't be at the table for those types of discussions. But what's improving is the communication part. It used to be that faculties would prepare their agreements with the provost, and at some point, dean would tell us, or an associate dean would tell us, oh, but that was discussed with the provost. He said yes. So do whatever. Now it's a bit better. It's a bit better in the sense that we're saying, well, it's not just a yes. Is the budget there? What's the priority of that versus other priorities? So now we're still not really part of these discussions before the agreements are made, but the second they're made, we have them. So that is something that's new since I think it's the second year that we really... involved. I'm meeting with all the deans, telling them, talk to us. So improving, trying to get them to come forth. But at least once those agreements are done, we get them. Shelley reads them all, identifies all the areas where we'll be involved, and they're numerous. Generally, about 50% we already have either in the roadmap or in the list of requests for enhancements. And another 50% is huge surprise. And mostly when I talk to the deans and I say, well, why didn't you talk to us about this? They don't even realize there's an IT impact in many instances. So it's not that people don't want to talk to us, it's that they just don't realize that IT is everywhere. You're moving the dentistry clinic. Well, you're moving your systems, you're moving your servers, you're going to want to have LAN jacks in your new office, you want to have network, you want to have telephony, but it just doesn't, they don't realize. So a big part of what we do, in a way, has become committed commodity. It's just there. People don't realize unless it doesn't work. But when it works, it's taken as something absolutely obvious, natural, like air, and nobody realizes that there's a lot of work that has to be done. So realistically, the best we can hope for is being informed as soon as possible when those discussions start, so that we at least have awareness and we can kind of think a bit of what it could mean. But we realistically, I would be very surprised if we would get more than that, let's say. So I think I downed everybody. Yeah?
It's not a question, but based on what you're saying, why don't we communicate to them what we do at NIT, like all the different units? Maybe they don't realize what we do.
Well, we do on a regular basis. We've done a presentation to all deans explaining everything that was done in IT. When the IT steering group was active, we went into extreme detail on everything we were doing. In the meetings I have with the deans, we may not cover everything, but we do cover areas that may be of a specific import for them. What are the initiatives that are coming up? We do encourage them in terms of talk to us, tell us what you're doing, tell us where you want to go, what are the initiatives that are important for you. So yes, there is that, but you know, most people think they understand IT because they have a computer in their office at home or in their basement, and it's plugged on their TV, and they do things, and they in their mind, you know, that's IT. When you start talking and making people realize that managing one is not the same thing as managing 10,000, then some awareness comes, but it's not obvious. People use it on a daily basis. They feel they're very familiar with the technology, but in reality, they have very little understanding of what's required to make it work. Other questions? Not only for me, but for others?
I had, I think, an answer maybe to Ron's question from earlier about the slabs.
Yes.
So if I understand it correctly, sort of one of the issues or challenges with a matrix or cross-functional organization is that you potentially, because you're distributing responsibility, ownership sometimes becomes a little less clear. So you have all of these people across multiple units or teams that don't really necessarily gel or work together as a cohesive whole the way they would to if they're all reporting to the same hierarchical boss. So I think you address that through one of the ways that was sort of described in the matrix presentation is through improving communication, but also in having a clear understanding of accountability and ownership of your processes, ownership of your services. So I think that's how we can sort of combat the problems that come out of creating slabs or avoid creating slabs altogether.
Other questions? Come on. Can't believe.
She has to go. Ryan was getting up to ask me. After 35 years, you know, you'd go first. No. Oh, so then I can hear him better. All right. We're doing this banner upgrade, and we know that it's been a challenge. And one of the things when we were doing YouApply, one of the reasons we didn't put YouApply in Banner was because putting it outside of Banner was going to make the Banner upgrade easier when it came along. And yet, the YouApply and the integrations seem to be one of the big resource sucker-uppers, for want of a better word. That's one of our challenges in getting a test environment for the upgrade set up with all these separate integrations is taking so much time, it's delaying the whole schedule. So was there something wrong with our thinking when we said, it's better to have things outside? If everything was in Banner, we'd create the clone and it would all be there. We wouldn't have to have all the other environments. Or are there some pieces that we're missing to facilitate that? How can we make these upgrades in our dev QA integration production environments easier to manage and to coordinate these processes?
Two parts. I want to ask Elise to answer that one because she wasn't there. So, two things. Yes, we wanted to do the YouApply outside of Banner because currently we have more than 1,000 customization in Banner, and where we're going to hit the wall is with version 9. I think that has been explained many, many times. Version 9 is a different code base. If we want to move there, we will have to redo all those customization entirely, and that will transform that upgrade in a total nightmare to a point that we'll probably won't do it. So we're going as far as we can with this current upgrade. So there's this. I think that was right. And if we're going to develop new functionality that's not available in the core system, it should be outside of the system so that we're not impeded by that code when we move to a newer version. That being said, the way we built you apply, let's say we didn't keep it simple. It is a very, very complex integration. We did it in a way that would handle any possible extension that would appear in the next 25 years. It is very, very complex, very, very detailed. And because of that, it makes it hard to move, and especially from the integration viewpoint, because there's a lot of integration into Banner, but there's also the integration into Documentum that kind of create that three-pronged integration map that is not obvious in terms of building the tests and the QA environments. So I think the principle was right. The way we built the application in terms of how we managed the integration was not ideal because we did point-to-point integration a lot. We couldn't at that time. We weren't very well equipped to do web services and those type of integration. Well, some are, but a lot are not. And the coupling is too intricate. And that makes it hard. So, as I said, the principle was good. The rendering, maybe not as good as... Now we learned. So that's good. Next time will be better.
But can it's I? Still, no? It's not just UFI and Documentum. There's a whole list of integrations.
I'll try with this one. We are starting a project on application integration governance to better manage our integrations and use more the services, manage those services, APIs, and all these things. And it's been started for a few weeks now, and we want to go for a call for tender and all that. We're trying to get that in so that all our other major projects, we can do better in our integrations, because we cannot go on doing point-to-point integration, obviously. We're getting all these new, you saw the list of projects we're going to deal with, and we have to get a better base for all these integrations and learn how to do them a little bit better, just so that we don't get into a Banner upgrade type of mode where integrations are the main portion that we're dealing with right now to get into.
You might tell me go to the blog and read, but I want to ask about the ITSM project in that light of answering about the Banner upgrade, because my understanding from this presentation is that we're building our McGill solution around the companies, the provider's solution. So are we going to fall into the same predicament 5 years from now when the company changes their whatever base code or whatever, that we, with all our built solution, will have the same thing, or we're having, we're making steps to ensure not to fall into that trap?
Yes, we're taking clear steps not to fall into that. Maybe the presentation might be a bit misleading. What we're saying is that what Sumo IT is going to provide is the baseline process as is it. Like, let's say, the basic process as it's provided as a starting tool. From there, you can configure your environment to make sure that it fits better. Let's take, for example, they may have 8 roles or 8 level of approvals as a basic standard for doing a change, for accepting a change. In our cases, we may say, well, we want to. So what's the... What's the changes that we're going to need to do as to the process without changing the application, without remaining inside the application? Everything that expands the scope, This is where there's going to be a process for having change reviewed by both the core team, but as well by the steering committee, if it goes beyond what the application can provide or from the scope that has been defined. So we're not changing the application in itself, nor developing on the side of it. That's not within the goals of the solution, but it's to remain inside there. But because Sumo IT had to have a defined scope, they're doing kind of a vanilla install, making us accountable, making us autonomous to be able to customize it as part of delivery one. Then they leave, and we can continue on based on that vanilla version, continuing to adapt the process to the McGill requirement. But that's within that's within the solution provided by ServiceNow. Nor do we want to create, because ServiceNow allows you to create application and develop your own. That's not what we want. We bought it to leverage specific processes that we had, which are ITIL standard processes, mostly, and implement those. Those are features that are already existing within ServiceNow. How you decide to implement them, that may vary from one organization to the other, and that's what we mean between the Sumo IT scope of work that they're going to provide, and the McGill requirement is actually, let's say, they're providing three forms for change requests. We may need five. We need to do the extra two. So that's the gap between Sumo and us. These are example of gaps.
Just to add, so you talk about the base three forms, and then let's say we need an additional two. Those additional two aren't changes to the sort of base code. This is in the ServiceNow world. This is all considered configuration. So we're not doing any customization to ServiceNow. There's an interesting stat that ServiceNow likes to put out. 98% of their customer base are running the current version of the application within 6 months of its release. So that's, I think, telling that, you know, people, the way they're using ServiceNow, they're not customizing it. They configure on top. When they upgrade the base code underneath, it's completely separate from the configuration that the customer does. So I don't think we'll get into the same kind of situation that we have with Banner.
If I may, continuing to answer, sure. I think also, I mean, it's inevitable that we will have more and more of those integration. Just think about R2R. I mean, when R2R is going to be there, we're going to have another type of integration. I think one of the things we may not have looked at yet, and we will have to, is also to adapt our testing strategies accordingly, because of those constraints that we have of things needing to be in sync. I mean, today we think things need to be in sync for us to do our testing. Moving forward, we may have to think it differently, or put in place some mechanism that will allow us still to do our tests without having to do those cloning or those things like that. So I think it's going to force us to change our processes around testing as well.
I work for the CCS web group, and we work with a lot of different departments and have a lot of different partners, and IT is only half of the problem that we're solving together. And I wonder if there's a process in place to have our partners accountable to the decisions that they're making and what was promised from their side. So accountability mostly.
The objective.
I'm not sure I understand your question. Can you?
My question is the accountability of
how
the
do we
partners.
Hold business accountable for what they ask for?
Thank you.
Yeah. We have a special challenge with that, with the web group and with the content management group, because we don't have one single clear owner. If we had one clearly identifiable owner, so we had one business owner of that service, so if it was, you know, the Secretariat General or, enrollment services or something like that, it would be much easier for us to hold business accountable. But when we don't have one owner, then who are we going to hold accountable for things? So part of what we're trying to do is when we have projects or evolutions, the whole business need statement process, making the business need statements more visible to the people that we're working with, making the prioritization of that more visible, our whole macroscope, the whole macroscope methodology that we're developing so that we can have more formal sign-off on what people are asking for and what testing processes we're involved with them. That's going to help a lot with holding people accountable too. But we're never going to have one clear business owner for those services that we can hold accountable.
Yeah, I guess the individual partners.
Yeah, it's just going to be on an individual. So when we have an evolution or we have an enhancement, we can hold whoever's requested that accountable. But in terms of the entire service, we're never going to have one single owner, or at least not anytime in the near future.
Okay.
And I think clarifying with them what's their role and responsibility when during either a project or an evolution is, here's what IT is responsible for, but here's what you as a client is responsible for. It's not just I told you I want this, then come back when it's ready. No, it's an interaction also with the clients. So we need also to be more transparent and explain more what are their responsibility in the context of that initiative.
And we're going to have to do that over and over again before they really understand what's going on. And I'm thinking of a recent example we had where we went through that process and we explained, this is your role, this is our role, this is what it's going to look like. And then at one point we all got together and they said, we're getting tired of having to do your UAT. And it's right in the name. Who's responsible for it? So I think it's just as we have to go through a learning experience in ITS, understanding our own processes and methodologies and how they roll out, I think we have to expect the same thing of our business users. We're going to have to go through many different iterations with them before they understand that the UAT is not ours. And they're not doing it for me. But that's going to take a little bit of time for us to get them to understand that.
Would BRM help with that? Business relationship management?
Yes, I think that would. Any mechanism we have where we discuss with our users, you know, what is the IT, what can we do for them and how is that going to happen and what is the collaboration that's required between the users and us for things to happen, that's a plus. So the business relationship model that we're piloting currently and that we would wish to expand is certainly a way of getting there. Yeah. Other questions? You all want your lunch? Well, thank you. Oh, okay.
For the enrollment to employee engagement results, will we just get the results for IT, or will there be a breakdown?
There is a breakdown. Unfortunately, we're not able to break down all units because the way the survey is built, you need to have need more than 30 respondents within a group. So, the PMO, for example, CCS. They're rolled into the CIO office. They don't have distinct results, unfortunately. But ISR, NCS, and ICS have distinct results, and those results will be communicated to you through your directors. But you will get them. You'll get the IT, and you'll get the ISR. What you won't get is the others. So you'll get IT and you'll get your unit.
But not the rest. But can any of you speak to whether there were any interesting differences across units?
They are, but they are in all sorts of area, and I think that it's kind of unfair to create. I don't want to create we're better than you in this and blah 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 and that type of thing. I don't think is constructive. So. we're not going there.
But somebody who's doing well at something, maybe we can borrow practices from them.
Yeah. Well, I think that's certainly a discussion that can happen at the director's level, but I feel that. We also want, the smaller the unit is, the group is, the more identifiable things are,
yes.
And you need to respect that.
Small change will make big change over the time, but it has to be part of each team to do something, then you increase the satisfaction. If we try to do a big recipe for everyone, doesn't ensure that it will happen. I think it's important that we linked it and we adapted to the need of the group, because the role is a little bit different and it's varied. So we have more we respect that, better will be the satisfaction for the people.
Vicky's finished, so.
Okay, anybody else?
No?
No.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.